Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. The date is April 17th, the year 2000, and I think it's very appropriate that this be the day that this recording is being done. And the reason that it's important is because it's also called Black Monday, the stock market. I'm sitting in Sydney, Australia right now, and the All Ordinary is crashing through the floor. People are panicking. So we thought it was very important that I interview a dear friend of mine for years. His name is David Novak, and he's one of the best stock pickers or people who invest in stocks that I know. He's not only a fundamental stock picker, but he's also a technical stock picker. And the reason I say that is when it comes to the subject of investing, most people think that all there is to investing is you buy a stock for 10 and you hope it goes to 20 and you sell and then you're a genius and all that. And there's, you know, that's more to investing in stocks and real estate or bonds or whatever it is than just buying low and selling high. So I'm very happy, as I said to David when he came in here, I'm surrounded by guys who are experts in real estate, and I don't have very many friends who are experts at stocks, so I'm very glad that he's here. And I just think it's coincidental that he comes in smiling on Black Monday when everybody else is crying the blues. So David, would you mind introducing yourself and telling a little bit about your background so they know why you're smiling on Black Monday?
Thanks, Robert. Well, one of the reasons is because I had hedge positions, so meaning I was short in the market. So I was actually making money while the market's going down, and that's actually where I make most of my money.
Right. That's what I want people to understand, that a professional investor makes money when the market goes up.
Yes.
But they very often make much more money in a market down.
That's right.
And the market goes down faster than it goes up.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons the market's taking a bit of a dive today is obviously what happened in the U.S. market on Friday night, and with the high technology stocks, the NASDAQ, which collapsed about 34% in the past week. And when you consider it took something like 6 months to go to the high recently and to drop 34% in a week, it just shows you that fear has taken over greed. And, right. You know, and that's just the nature of the game.
Right. As they say in the industry, the bull comes up from the stairs.
That's right.
And the bear jumps out the window.
Yes.
And the bear just jumped out the window today.
Yeah.
And the reason it's kind of interesting is because today is Monday in Australia, yeah, but it's Sunday in America.
Yes.
So the Australians right now are doing their best to unload as hard as they can because they know Black Monday still has not yet arrived in America.
Yeah. And can I also point out the added pressure that happens as to why people panic? Is when they buy stocks, they don't only just buy with money they can afford to invest, but they also borrow money.
Right.
So then they borrow what they call a margin, on a margin loan basis. And of course, what happens first thing this morning is when the market's collapsing, all the clients who have bought stocks on margin lending or margin loan basis is called up and saying, could you deposit more funds into your account today? Otherwise, we'll have to sell you out.
So the selling accelerates.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's something else that people who are not available to have a margin account, they often borrow money out of their houses or their,
yep,
retirement funds and all this to put it in.
Yes.
And as we all know, my definition of an amateur right now is somebody who has been in the market less than 13 years because it's been 13 years since the last crash in 87.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about this in 1929 when the market crashed. I think it was less than 20% of the U.S. population was in stocks. Mm-hmm. And today in Australia, 60% of the population is in stocks.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are within the last 10 years,
mm-hmm,
and most of them with borrowed money.
Absolutely.
So this is adding an acceleration to it. Plus, you have the WWW, the World Wide Web now, and people can move money electronically faster than they've ever have before. So this is what causes, I mean, even as we smile, there's a sense of trepidation,
yes,
in what could happen if it just keeps going.
Yes. It gets back to the note that what was dominant in the market up till recently was greed. You know, and people kept buying and buying and buying. People would come up to me and say, I'm buying this high-tech stock, and they're paying $3.50, and the stock was 50 cents 6 months ago. And I say, why are you paying $3.50 for it? And it's not made any money. There's like not a dollar profit. And he's saying, because a friend of mine told me that it's going to double in the next 6 months. So just based on hearsay, that's the novice investor. And when I hear that, as soon as I hear people saying that, I'm out of the market.
Right. As I say, when taxi drivers start giving tips and it's time to get. Even worse than that is that for the very first time, people are investing in highly speculative startups with absolutely no fundamentals to them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, even back in 1929, they were speculating on more or less blue chip companies with some degree of cash flow to them.
Mm-hmm.
or some degree of asset to them. But these things are just purely pieces of paper as a business plan with maybe a 19 or 25-year-old kid running it. And everybody's piling money in it because they put .com after it.
And as you rightly pointed out, most investors that are in the market today haven't been in the market for longer than 10 years. I go back to 1982, so I went through the 87 crash. So you can, once you've gone through that experience, you recognize the signs.
Right.
So it's not hard to know. It was like you didn't have to be Einstein to work out that there was going to be a major correction here.
Right. As David and I always said, the way you become old and wise is you start off young and foolish, and we all started off young and foolish at one time. So today, there's a lot of people becoming older and wiser as the market goes down.
Well, they're probably gripped by fear and, you know, throwing up or whatever they're doing at the moment, but they'd be certainly panicking and hoping. I'd say what's taken over is, you know, as I said, it's gone from greed to fear and probably in hope now.
Right.
And the worst thing about investing in the markets is to be driven by your emotions when you don't have a strategy in place for what happens if the market does go down. Or if it goes up.
I was on the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting System's late line program the other night, and they had a stockbroker on board. And he says he's getting worried because he has people calling him up right now and saying, you know, I know you have stocks that go up and down, but do you have any stocks that only go up? I mean, that's how bad people don't know what's really happening out there.
Yes.
Another aspect, rather than margin and borrowing from their house, I have a friend of mine who invested in this .com company, and it went up $1 million on paper, although it has no fundamentals. I mean, they're not turning a profit at all. So he thinks, in his asset column, he thinks he has $1 million, but it's just this opinion.
Absolutely.
So what he went out and did was bought himself $1 million house. So now he has mortgage, and now he's got $1 million of debt and a deflating asset column at high rate of speed. So those are the types of things that people have done when they really – I guess I said greed, but more euphoria sets in.
Yes.
And that's the thing, that's the problem.
Yeah. In fact, you know, it swings between two levels. It goes from to elation, or what I call greed, or people being elated in the market, to the opposite, which is called people being in fear or depressed.
Yeah. You know? But a depression is only people being depressed.
Exactly.
And that's all it is.
Yeah.
The next thing that I hear happening is, okay, now it's time to buy the dip. And the problem is, in 1929 when the market crashed, it took till 1935 for it to hit bottom.
Absolutely.
So the people who had the strategy during over the last 5 or 10 years of buying the dips, they might be buying what they call a falling knife. They're grabbing a knife so they buy it at, let's say, 10, and it now goes down to 5.
Yes.
And then they're going to try and buy it at 2, and it goes to 1.
Yeah.
So they're losing all the way down.
Yeah, especially that right now, probably there'd be investors out there looking at the market thinking, oh, now it's a great time to buy again.
Yeah.
And they will start buying, but the problem is after a day or two, they'll start to realize that then it's not going any higher.
Right, they bought the falling knife.
Exactly, and then suddenly they want to sell, and guess what? There's not enough buyers around, and it falls even faster. So,
right, there's nothing more depressing than to say, okay, sell at 10, and the broker says, we have no buyers at 10. Sell at 9, we have no buyers at 9. Sell at 6, we have no buyers at 6. We'll just sell it then.
I remember in the 87 crash, and there were clients that were screaming and crying and begging for the broker to just get them out at any price.
At any price.
At any price. You know.
Right.
At that stage, I just went to sleep. I woke up and heard that the market had crashed and thought, oh, well, it's no point joining the crowd. So I woke up about midday and said, well, tell me the bad news. And it was a lesson that, you know, has done me well over the years.
It's been valuable experience.
Invaluable experience, yeah.
So while we're speaking of experience, would you mind going back and, you know, giving people your backgrounds, you know, starting at age 15? I think you have a very interesting background there.
I couldn't wait to leave school, and I just wanted to get out there and discover the world and find out what's available. I actually started a job as a office boy for Chubbs Australia, and I was given some figures to add up, and next thing I had this flair for numbers, and my boss at the time said, who was an accountant, said, why don't you study accountancy? And I said, what's that? And he said, well, you know, you do this and this, and I went and studied it for 6 years part-time and progressed from there. And, you know, to cut a long story short, I was the chief accountant of Barclays Bank at 25.
You're the chief accountant for Barclays Bank?
Barclays Merchant Bank here in Sydney.
That's impressive.
Yeah, in the 80s. And then I moved to Western Australia, and I was the financial controller of the West Australian Development Corporation, which was a $6 billion merchant bank.
Well, congratulations. So you're self-taught all the way up from there.
Yeah, and learning some hard lessons along the way, particularly once I started investing in the stock market. And I like sharing the story about my first investment, which was in a company called Buddha Gold, and which was given to me as a tip by the finance director at Barclays at the time. And he said, look, my brother-in-law reckons you've got to buy this stock. It's a gold stock. And at that time, gold prices were very high and going up.
What year would that have been about?
That was about 82, 83.
That's correct, yeah.
And so he said, buy this stock. It's called Buddha Gold. So I invested $1,000, which in those days was quite a bit to just put in first time. And a couple of weeks later, I walked into my office, and there on the back page of the Financial Review was in bold headlines, Buddha goes into receivership. And that was my first lesson about beware of taking tips, especially from brother-in-laws or friends. So I'm not saying ignore tips, but I'm saying check them out. Do your research. Do your homework.
Right. And so the question I have for you is, how do you find the information required to, let's say, make at least some degree of an educated decision?
One of the biggest problems today, I guess, is that with the internet is the amount of information that's available. So one of the things that people are looking for or are looking to obtain is what's the fastest way to get the information that I need to make the right choices or decisions. And that's where you need to come to people who've been in the market for some time, who understand how markets work from a sentimental point of view, but also how to access that information so it gives you the confidence as to know when to buy and when to sell. That's the key, when to buy and when to sell and when to hold, actually.
When you look at a company, let's start with the fundamentals.
Yes.
What are some of the main points you look at?
Main things I look at is cash flow. That's important.
Do you find that on the financial statement of the company?
Yes. You can find out what their cash flow is. Have a look at the strength of their balance sheet, how many assets they've got. Not only just how much in dollar terms their asset value is, but what does it comprise of? How much is in cash? In liquid, what I call liquid securities, or how much is it in tangibles, like what I call intangibles is made up, goodwill, that sort of thing. So how much is it real assets, you know, if they have property or plant? So you can actually take out, discount all the intangibles and really get to the core level or root of what the company is actually worth.
What you're saying is a lot of times an asset column can be deceiving.
Yes.
Good.
Absolutely. Like the internet stocks. Can I give you a quick example? News Corporation just recently went from just under $10 to a high of $28 in a couple of months, based on a valuation of their assets, or perceived valuation of their assets in the media sector or satellite group. And one of the trouble that analysts had in the broking fraternity or community is who can place a value on those assets? So it was just a market-driven valuation. There was no firm offer to say, this is what these assets are worth.
And that's what I talk about in Rich Dad Poor Dad, my book, is that when somebody says my house is worth $100,000 or my net worth is $100,000, sometimes you can actually slide your golf clubs in there, your golf shoes, your bowling ball, your Gucci shoes, your neckties, your personal effects, and you can actually beef up your net worth very easily by putting bogus assets inside there. And the companies do the same thing.
Yes, absolutely. One of the key ratios that I look at is return on assets. What are the return on the net assets of the business? Are management using their assets to the best of their ability? That's the bottom line.
Right, if they have $10 million in cash sitting there, you sort of wonder what the heck they're doing with
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Why haven't they moved it into an account or reinvested or done something?
Yeah, and is it producing profits?
Right.
And that's a very good example. I mean, I know a gold company here that's got $25 million in cash, no debt. Okay.
It's not a very efficient company.
No, it's not a very efficient company. In fact, the valuation of the stock is the cash value of the company. And the reason it's the cash value of the company is because they haven't been growing their earnings. They just got this cash sitting there. So that's an important criteria. Because what analysts like, because the analysts are the ones that are looking at these companies and recommending it to their clients for brokers, is they're always consistently looking for companies that have a growing earnings per share. In other words, growing profits over a six-month period of time. So six-monthly and annually. So if you see a company that's continuously growing, they're the sort of companies that you know that management are turning over their assets or they're utilizing their assets to the best ability and they're just incrementally increasing the profitability of the business.
Good. Does Stock Doctor analyze companies like in Canada and America and other parts of the world?
No, we're working on that at the moment to actually get into the American market and for the same reason to actually define which companies in the United States are the strongest fundamentally and on a return on assets basis.
So where you glean your information from then is from the actual financials of the company?
Yes.
Now, when a person reads, like, the Wall Street Journal, what information are they gleaning from there?
Well, the information they're getting from there is certainly the reporters or the editorial opinion. Where that comes from, it might be from a stockbroker themselves or an analyst. I like to just get objective information rather than subjective information.
What is this news of things happening and changing more than anything else? It's not really that solid or you wouldn't make a decision off of it.
Well, people do. News does move the markets.
Right.
It does. You can't ignore it.
That's a technical site.
Yes.
Right. So what we're talking about here is that, you know, I created Cash Flow 101, which was fundamentals, and Cash Flow 202 is technical. And technical is moving on supply and demand with a market actually saying this stock is valuable. I mean, like some of these dot-com companies, they have no fundamentals.
No.
But because some analyst or the market says it's valuable, suddenly the price just rockets up. That's a technical valuation based upon the sentiments and the emotion of the market.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, you could have a company that's highly profitable, but the market doesn't like it, and the share price will actually go down, although its fundamentals are good.
Yes, that's right. You could say the opinions in the that's reported in the newspaper is a part of your technical basis.
That's right. And that's why people say, well, Warren Buffett is a fundamental investor.
Yes.
And when people say, well, who is the most famous technical investor? It was actually Charles Dow of Dow Jones, who owns the Wall Street Journal. So the people that are reading papers, like, this is part of financial literacy, is what the heck are you reading? You know, what information are you reading? So people who read the Wall Street Journal are just trying to buy on sentiment and price going up and down.
Yes.
And what you and I are trying to say, what we're going to get at today, is that to be successful as a professional investor, which making money up as well as going down, you need to have good, strong fundamentals as well as technical.
Correct. Absolutely. Right. The combination of the two is very powerful.
It's almost essential.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
Right. Yeah. So would you mind going into fundamental? Fundamental is basically how well manages the company, what are its real assets, what is its economic value in the community, does it have long term, you know, will it always be profitable, is it well managed, are they reinvesting their money, are they making best use of their assets? Those are the fundamentals,
yeah,
right?
That's it, correct.
Like right now, Ford Motor Company may not be a very popular company as far as the stock market goes, but fundamentally a strong company.
Yes.
And the same as General Motors or... what was it, when Procter & Gamble in America, I was doing a radio show in Cincinnati, I think it was Cincinnati, where they were from, and they're saying, you know, this is terrible, Procter & Gamble stock is going down, this is going down. I said, well, then you should be buying it.
All right.
Because fundamentally, people will always buy shampoo and toothpaste and toothbrushes. I mean, it's a very good fundamental company.
Absolutely. Just like food companies. You know, we look at some of our stocks here in Australia, like Coles Myer and Woolworths, fundamentally very, very sound companies have come off the recent highs. So right now, from a technical point of view, they're looking like good buys because people need to eat. And
right.
That's one of those things that right now I think, not only from a fundamental but a technical point of view, they look like companies that are worth investing in.
Right. You mean they have good cash.
Yes.
Good profitability.
Absolutely.
Dividends.
Absolutely.
But their prices are low.
Yes.
The technical prices are low.
Absolutely.
So that's what you're looking for by
correct.
That point.
Yeah. One of the things I teach is looking at charts. So I teach people how to read charts.
And charts is now a technical site.
That's the technical side.
Right. Yeah. And the income statement and balance sheet is the fundamental site.
Correct.
Right.
So I look at charts, and I look at daily charts that go back 6 months. I look at weekly charts that go back 2 to 3 years. I look at monthly charts that go back 10 years.
And really, it's interesting that charts are centuries old.
Yeah.
Because it started with the rice farmers in Japan doing the charts of supply and demand of rice.
That's right. It goes back to the 1600s. They used a method called candlestick charting.
Right.
See, as human beings, we're quite predictable in nature. So I never understand when someone says, I don't bother about charts, I don't look at it. You know, it's just a lot of hogwash. Just look at the fundamentals. I mean, I don't know where they're looking, but if you look at a chart, there's a very predictable trend.
Right.
And that's when you look at the past and you see what's happened in the past, you see it repeating in the future.
Right. And other people on the flip side say, I never look at the fundamentals, I look at the technicals.
That's right.
You know what I mean? The people are one way or the other.
Yeah.
I think that's where they get into trouble.
Yeah. Another quote by William Gann. William Gann was a recognized predictor and trader in the 30s.
He's a technical guy, right?
Technical guy, yeah. He was incredible at predicting the highs and lows in the market. He used mathematical equations and other esoteric means. But he said that nothing changes under the sun.
Right. And isn't it a classic? You know it's going to crash when people say to you, this time it's different.
Yes.
This time is different.
Well, absolutely. Like I said, you know, only a few weeks ago, I've had so many people coming up to me who've never invested in the stock market and say they've just invested based on somebody telling them to invest and buy because they just made 50%. You know?
Right.
They are the signs to me that when the novices are getting into the market, the professionals like myself are getting out. And when it reaches a low point, that's when the professionals start coming back in again.
That's right. When everybody's finally given up and they start selling.
So
the Orientals have – the Chinese have a word, kia su, which means I don't want to miss out.
Right.
And so they say, well, you know, I saw my neighbor make 10,000, my other neighbor made 100,000, and they say, oh, I better not miss out. And they say, I'm going to call my broker now. And just at that time, they miss out.
Right. Yeah.
And it stops rising on them.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you've mentioned the word patterns before. I mean, patterns are a key, actually, to technical analysis because there are certain patterns that occur in the market or when you're looking at a chart that are very predictable.
Right.
Like
80 to 90%
predictable that the market's going to move a particular way. It's
one incredible. Of those called the heads and shoulders.
Yep, head and shoulders, double bottoms, double tops, expanding triangles.
You know, and these are the technical guys that there's watching the price movements, and really it's the market emotion and sentiment, the popularity or lack of popularity of a company, not based upon its earnings.
Yes. Well, when I first started investing, I used to be what I call a fundamentalist, you know. Almost sounds like some sort of religious movement. But I found that even though I liked the fundamentals of the company, nobody was buying it except me.
Right. It could be a very profitable company.
Exactly.
It made a lot of sense. Well, we should buy this
Absolutely.
Company. Well-run, good management, good profitability. The guys are doing all the right things, but nobody wants to buy it.
Exactly. Of course, when the stock market crashed, and I got caught up in the euphoria of the whole market and greed and all that stuff, I made a commitment and more or less a mission to go and learn about as much as I could about the stock market and how could I not get caught in the future. And that's where I came up with understanding how to read charts and technical analysis. And I can tell you now, there is no way I could ever, ever invest in the stock market without looking at a chart. In fact, I'm more leaning towards technical analysis these days than fundamentals.
Because that's the price of the share.
Exactly. And we see at the moment, like I mentioned, gold stocks recently. Gold stocks, there's some very, very, very profitable gold companies out there that are returning more than 30, 40% on their assets. Even though the gold price is depressed, it's been going down for 15 years. And yet, no one's buying these companies. And one company has been paying 40% dividend. So that's a huge return each year for the last 3 years.
Right, and I was listening to some of these young guys who buy only internet. They're saying, well, nobody's going to buy gold because it's a dog stock now.
Exactly.
And what they don't realize is when the market gets really, really bad, the small gold companies fold.
Yep.
So that means the profitable, the stronger, or the better companies, I don't care if it's gold or cars or food, the bigger company that survives, suddenly they become more valuable because its competitors drop away.
Yep. And also, where do people run in the event of fear and loss? They go for safety.
Right.
So they'll buy bonds or they'll put in short-term money market or property or gold.
Right.
And right now, I feel the fundamentals are looking at some of these gold companies. If the gold price started to rise, then these companies are going to be extremely even more profitable than they are right now.
Well, I look at it a different way is that gold is actually indexed against the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. dollar is flying really high right now, which means it's more valued. I think it's overvalued personally.
Mm.
And since it's indexed to the dollar, gold prices are lower.
Mm.
And so when I was in Indonesia in 96 and 97 and Malaysia and Singapore, I said, you guys should be converting your current currency either to U.S. dollars or converting it to gold. And if they had converted it to gold, they would have lost nothing. They would have made money because their dollars dropped relative to the price of gold.
Yes.
Whereas gold didn't drop because U.S. dollar stayed strong.
Yeah. And gold is one of those commodities that's been around a very, very long time.
Right.
And always a store of security or safety or, you know, in cases of turmoil.
Well, I think what we have here is old economy and new economy because all the new guys, the tech stock guys, they have no respect for gold because they'll do it on technical trading.
Yes.
So they're basing their value upon their ability to buy and sell well.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas guys like you and I, we'd rather have hedges and, you know, little things, you know, blue chips are a little bit more secure sometimes.
Well, a balanced portfolio.
Yeah.
That's the key.
So the other thing